Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Shot Volume. I'm Nick Ashbourne with Anthony Petrielli. And in November, it's rare for us to get to talk fire sales. Teams are normally making those decisions a little further into the season, closer to the deadline is when we're talking big blockbuster trades. But the Calgary Flames look like a little bit of an exception. We knew coming into the year they had all these important guys who were coming up to the end of their contracts. We're talking about Zadorov, Tanev, Hanifin, Lindholm, who didn't have contracts. But the team was looking to compete. It's been an ugly start. Zadorov has already asked for a trade. Anthony, do you think we could see some earlier movement from Calgary than you normally get from teams in their position?
I don't know if we'll see earlier, but I mean, they're primed for a fire sale, and you could argue it kind of started in the summer. I mean, it probably started like a year ago, if we're being honest, but it started when they traded Tyler Toffoli, right? Like, they didn't need to trade him. If they were trying to be competitive this year, like truly, truly trying to be competitive this year, keeping Toffoli, not trading for Yegor Sharangovich, and a third round pick, like, they became an instantly worse team. Lo and behold, Toffoli's having a really good start to the season, as one would expect, because he's a really good player with the Devils. Like, if anything, I would turn around and ask, like, do you have confidence that Craig Conroy can make the right moves here? Because that trade already looks terrible to me. I thought it was bad the second they made it. And just the more kind of, you know, he has Sharangovich is like 25. He has a year left on his contract before hitting unrestricted free agency. And a third is minimal value. Like, I don't see the logic in that trade. And now he's going to have to turn around and trade a bunch of other guys too.
Yeah. I mean, Conroy tried to walk this middle path, right? Where it's like, I want to trade my guy because I don't think I'm going to resign him, but I want someone who will give me present value. And then I think he's got multiple 2 years, still not a and that's a contract they signed. He was a restricted free agent at the time. So it's still not an incredible amount of future value, but it was a little bit. And that's usually not the way to go, right? Like, the way to go is normally to say, we are playing for the future. I'm going to trade my player for future assets. But because they're coming off this weird season where all these numbers would tell you that they were really good at controlling the play, and if they just got some goaltending and they just got some finishing, that they could have been right in the playoff mix, I think he felt empowered to believe that this was a team that was ready to compete. And then they come out at the beginning of this year, and it's the same story, right? It's the exact same thing where they're kind of holding their own, but the goaltending isn't there and they can't finish. And so now, like you said, do you have faith in him to make these trades? I don't know. Like, he is, I think, kind of has to make them. And even when he was hired as GM, like, he referred to the situation they had before with Gaudreau where they let him go for nothing. And he basically said, like, under my watch, like, this kind of thing is just not going to happen because it's a terrible asset management thing. And that's totally true. And now he's sitting on like four really interesting players in terms of like the rest of the league perspective. These are four guys who could really help a contending team. Like Elias Lindholm, you're talking about a guy who can be a first-line center or second-line center on a really, really good team. All three of these defensemen would help basically any defense core in the NHL. So it is an opportunity for Conroy to show us what he's got. He really hasn't been great right out of the bat, but like, we're very early in his tenure. We'll see what happens. But there's not a lot of times as a GM you get to show what you've got so early, I guess.
When he says it like that too, you know, he came out right away, and I get why he did it. The market is tense because of, you know, how everything played out with Gaudreau and Tkachuk, and It is unacceptable to lose Gaudreau for nothing for free, but like you can't do that, especially, you know, they won one round that prior playoff. So I get why they went all in that year. He should have. They were a really good team. Markstrom, just I don't know what's happened to him in that second round series against Edmonton and ever since then, but he hasn't really been the same. But so I get why Conroy said it, but he shouldn't have said it. Like now he's put himself on the spotlight and on the clock, and everyone's going to sit there and say, well, you better sign these guys, because if you don't, like, we're waiting for the trade. Like, you've put a little bit extra pressure on it where it didn't need to have that pressure. And now, because the Toffoli trade has kind of just unraveled the way that it has, and I think it's going to get worse. I don't think it's going to get better, that trade. Like, now it's going to turn to even more. Not only you have to trade these guys, but you have to get a really good return. And we look at someone like Nikita Zadorov, who I like. He's a solid defenseman, but realistically, he's a 5, maybe a 4. Like, they're not playing him that much. Like, I think that part's kind of getting lost in the trade request. It's in part because he's not playing that much. And like that was referenced in the request. Like, he doesn't agree with his role. He's probably like, why am I playing borderline third pairing minutes on this not very good hockey team? And what do those kinds of defensemen get you? Like, Luke Shen last year went for a third round pick. I think Zadorov is a little bit better than Shen. Like, he's definitely way better offensively. He doesn't have, you know, as long of a career or even like the Stanley Cup playoff experience. But all in all, you know, those defensemen are not going for as much as I think people are hoping that they would.
I think the thing that Conroy's got going for him is that in this, you know, it's a pretty capped out NHL right now. The vast majority of teams who are contending don't have a lot of money to play with. These guys he has to trade are all relatively affordable. Like, each of these contracts is under $5 million. You can retain half of that. So you're looking at guys that a lot of teams aren't able to necessarily fit in this second, but there's a contract on their books. There's some kind of flip you can make where they slot in. And because of that, I think the market for these players is going to be pretty robust. Like, Zadorov, as you mentioned, maybe he is more of a 4 or 5. Tanev is reliable as they come on a right side, which is pretty rare. Hanifin is the sort of guy who could run a really good second pair. Like, these are the type of players where he doesn't have the leverage in the sense that people kind of know that he has to trade these players. But at the same time, when there are enough people in the market, when there are enough teams that are interested, that kind of leverage isn't as important because he can play the teams off each other. This is not me saying I'm 100% confident he's going to get a great deal here, but because of what we've seen with Toffoli, but the environment isn't necessarily as bad as maybe it looks when you take that initial fact of like, oh, he kind of has to trade these guys. When we hear that, we assume he's not going to get a good deal. But I think that because these players are fittable and because they're the type of players a lot of teams could use, he can play suitors off each other.
He feasibly has the best 3 defensemen available on the trade market. Like, we'll often see general managers or teams say, we have to wait for this, you know, player X to get traded to set the market. Like, Craig Conroy is the market on defense, you know, like you're right. And if he plays his cards right, he could come out of it looking like really pretty. Like, they're gonna have to rebuild and they're gonna have to figure out a number of the long-term contracts that they have on the books and so on and so forth. And, you know, Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau get flagged, but even guys like Blake Coleman, like, you know, these aren't guys.
It's not a good scene. Like, it's not a great seat to be in other than these trades that you can possibly make. But the long-term guys to build around it's dicey. That's for sure.
You know, I think by and large though, when you come down to it is like, they need this, they need to do this. They need to hit here. Like this isn't, there's talk about Noah Hanifin and working towards the contract extension and throwing out Devin Taves like numbers. And maybe he's the only guy where you could sit there and say he's young enough that if you keep him, like, we could be good 3 years from now. I don't know if that's necessarily worth signing him to a 7 or 8 year deal to hope that you're good on the second half of that contract. I would personally say no, but like, this is a chance for them to kind of, like, they're positioned well to, I don't want to say clean the slate, but kind of have a fresh start here. Cause it looks like a stale team. Like, it just looks, you know, like everybody's miserable there.
There's been some discussion recently about changing the 3-on-3 overtime format, not in a serious way, more changing the rules within it, kind of preventing teams from bringing the puck back after they gain the offensive zone, shot clock, different solutions are being tabled. This is not something that's going to happen in the immediate term, but it was interesting to me to hear this because I don't know about you, Anthony. I was a little bit surprised this came out of the blue a bit because a lot of the complaints you hear are about the shootout, not about the overtime itself. I'm curious to see where you are with it because we didn't discuss this before we went on, and I'm curious to see if we agree on it. And so I'm not going to tip my hat as to where I am, but where, what's your thought on tweaking some of the rules about 3-on-3?
So my main feeling on this is that the media is the most annoying thing of all time. Like, I don't know if I get to consider myself media. I generally don't, but you know, I'm old enough to remember decades ago when media was whining about no salary cap in the league and the lack of parity and throwing up, you know, Detroit and Toronto's salary cap structure compared to the bottom feeder teams in the league and how it was unfair. Like, I can by and large confidently say the salary cap is terrible, terrible for the game. I would way rather.
This is a fair point. This is not where I expected you to go with this question, but absolutely.
Matt Duchene, Matt Duchene scores one goal that's like 4 feet offside. Media again whines. We need reviews. Reviews are terrible. Like, I can't, there's nothing worse than you're watching a game. And you're like, oh my God, they're going to go back like a minute and we're going to go like Zapruder film this offside play to see if it's a goal or not, like totally against the spirit of the rule. But you can't blame teams for playing within the confines that the league is setting up. We see it with physicality, you know, every time there's a hit or something and it's everything breaks loose. But by and large, fans like hits. I'm not arguing, you know, for head trauma or anything dirty, but we still want to keep physicality in the game, and you often see that. And now it's 3-on-3 overtime, which, again, there was a time where the media was arguing for the shootout. Like, the media wanted the shootout originally. And then the shootout happened, and it was like, this is maybe a dumb way for games to end. So then they went with 3-on-3 overtime, which cut down the percentage of games going to a shootout in like under half, like 20% of games, something or other, were going and ending in a shootout that went to overtime. And now that number is like 8%, like teams average like 6 shootout games a season, something along those lines. So I just think, you know, it's always something, you know, we've heard bigger net arguments, like all this stuff. And it's just like, just stop. Like, teams will figure it out. I think it's already a very unnatural against hockey like situation to put them in 3-on-3 full ice. And now you're going to even further restrict the thing. Like, the whole purpose of hockey is that it is a free-flowing game where anything goes with very minimal restrictions in terms of offsides and icings. Like, now, shot clock, all this. When does it stop?
Yeah, I think broadly, I'm with you. This strikes me as a solution without a problem. Like, I don't mind 3-on-3 hockey the way it's currently played. Like, I get that it is a bit of a weird way to finish a game, because it is so unlike what the rest of the game has been like. But for me, it's preferable to a shootout by a massive degree. And the idea of guys whirling the puck out back into the neutral zone, like, you sometimes you see that in the course of a real game too, if an attack is broken down or they're doing a change or something like that. Like, it isn't some crazy thing that you couldn't possibly conceive of. And realistically, like, I get it. There's an idea that these guys are carrying the puck for too long and somehow that's boring. But for me, that kind of builds suspense. It's like, okay, they're carrying, they're possessing, they're wheeling, they're passing. When's the opportunity going to come? And when it comes, there's a million ways for the puck to go back the other way. Like, a goalie can make a save. A guy can blow a pass. Like, a stick check can happen. It's not like when they win the faceoff, and yes, sometimes they have the puck for a minute, but they don't normally have the puck for 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, a team gets an opportunity and then the other team finds a way to get the puck and gets an opportunity too. I guess there are some cases where a team wins the faceoff and scores and wins quickly. But like, we're talking about a tiny, tiny fraction. It strikes me as something people are getting worked up about that I don't see the issue. Like, I genuinely like 3-on-3, especially as a way to stop shootouts from happening. Maybe 4-on-4 is more pure hockey, but it is odd to me. Like, the idea of having a shot clock is so much more offensive to me than the idea of someone wheeling the puck out of the offensive zone.
What is the percentage of games and fans that where it goes to a shootout and you sit there as a viewer and go, oh, thank God. Like that overtime was terrible. Like, I'm just so happy that we're now going to the shootout, like zero, like history of all time, 0%.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Before the year, they ask players about what rules they want to see changed, and a huge number of them say they don't like the shootout and they want to figure out ways to avoid shootouts. Yeah. And so it seems like that's the problem that we should be examining and potentially addressing, not the part before the shootout that most people maybe have the occasional complaint with, but are broadly okay with it. I don't know, like so many people would be happy if you extended overtime. And I don't know what constituency this idea is going to appeal to.
You know, pretty clear basketball is it's half court, you know, like there's a very clear offense and defense by and large. Football is stop and start. Baseball is stop and start, or however you want to describe hitter after hitter situations. But hockey is the only major North American sport that has this free flowing kind of game. You can, I guess, put soccer in that category too. I don't think soccer is sitting there by and large going, should we, you know, have players stop passing it back to the goalie during gameplay? And should we have players, you know, get the ball off their foot a little bit faster to expedite things? Like it's almost like, how do we coerce them into making more mistakes to make this like fake exciting? Because that's what it is, right? Like players in the NHL loop out of the zone because they're in a tight spot and they're like, you know what? Risk reward, I'd rather just pull out and regroup and start again than force this play like where I have to try to put it through someone's legs or toe drag someone because they've angled me off or whatever the case is, or they've ran out of space. So they pull the puck out of the zone. So this like fake way of potentially getting guys to make mistakes to create offense, which is already fake because it's 3-on-3, but now it's going to be even more fake because we're forcing them to do it. It's just bad. It's so bad.
Yeah, like you said, you're avoiding mistakes. So like, let's play it out, right? Like, let's say you gain the zone and you can't come back. Like, what happens then, chances are, is you're going to have more attempts on net quickly, which means the other team is more likely to bring the puck the other way. You're going to, in theory, have more rushes back and forth. First of all, there's plenty of rushes back and forth in 3-on-3 hockey as you watch it today. Like, that isn't, someone's not going to watch 5 minutes overtime and be like, man, there were no rushes out there. Like, it happens enough as it is. And secondly, like, again, I, and maybe it is because I am a fan of some of the other sports that are a little bit more stop and start, a little bit more suspense driven, but I enjoy the suspense of one team building possession, looking for the right opportunity and then striking kind of rapidly. Like, that is cool to me. And maybe that's not cool to other people. That's fine. That's subjective. But the idea that just like chaotic runs back and forth across the ice is better than that doesn't seem definitively true to me and doesn't seem like something people are calling for.
Here's what I would tell players to do if this were to pass. I'd be like, if you're in trouble in the offensive zone, if the stupid shot clock is going off, shoot it over the glass. It's not a penalty. I'd be like, you know what? Screw that. I'm not going to, like, don't force a shot. Don't force a play. Just flick it over the glass. You're in the NHL. Get a face off.
The watchword has been unintended consequences. Like, they mentioned that multiple times when they talked about this discussion. That's exactly the sort of thing they're talking about. And when you're looking for maybe a tiny marginal upgrade and you're opening the door to all these unintended consequences, you're probably not doing the right thing. Anthony, I think the time has come to talk about my Stanley Cup pick, the New York Rangers, who currently, as we record, have the second best record in the NHL, at least by points percentage, just behind the Boston Bruins. They have sort of a lot of statistical similarities with the Bruins, actually, in terms of being solid from a goal scoring perspective, but not incredible, and just, you know, keeping the puck out of their own net at a really, really strong rate, which is sort of what you expect from the Rangers, given the defense and the goaltending that they have. I think the difference that a lot of people have seen early on this year is you see Panarin, even taking it to a little bit of another level, but Alexis Lafreniere, you're finally getting a little glimpse of what him, you know, getting those minutes alongside elite players, having that big role, like pushing his career ahead. Cause it, you know, again, he's been too young for people to give up on him and too talented, but it seems like he'd been a little bit stalled out in a supporting role from which he could only do so much. And now he's unleashed a little bit, and that's having people pretty encouraged about what this offense can do and how they're performing, even without Adam Fox right now, who's dealing with an injury. Anthony, what are you seeing with New York at the moment?
Well, I mean, they obviously have a lot of talent, and I think where that primarily shines is special teams. Like, they have the second best power play in the league so far. Their penalty kill has also been excellent. It's sixth. You know, they haven't even... Shesterkin's been good so far, but he's, you know, the Rangers as a whole are only like 13th in 5-on-5 save percentage. So I think he is a whole other level. I still, by and large, think he's the best goalie in the league right now. So, you know, you mentioned Adam Fox is missing. Filip Hedl has only also played 10 of 14 games. The big question for the Rangers coming into the season for me was whether their young players could finally take a step, right? Like, there's been so much talk about having, especially in New York, they drafted these players because they, you know, especially Lafreniere, they won the lottery big that year to move up. And so this highly touted player came into a situation full of veterans that were trying to win right now. And he kind of had to conform down the lineup, as opposed to, you know, fellow draft classmate Tim Stützle, who came into a pretty bad team where he kind of just got to work through issues and then has since blossomed into this game breaker. So, you know, a little bit of the nature versus nurture argument there. And so the thing for me with the Rangers this season was, new coach, can they finally get a little bit more from the young guys? And we're starting to kind of see it a little bit. Lafreniere in particular, he's at 11.7 goals. Like, his career high is only 39 points, which is very, very little. So him finally taking that step, I think, would be a big deal. Capocacco has not at all. Like, he hasn't
absolutely
produced,
not. He's got two points, I think, as we record,
yeah,
right now.
He does, which is, honestly, it's stunning. I actually would have tabbed him a little bit more likely to produce this year compared to Lafreniere. But it's funny, when the Rangers went to the conference finals a couple of years ago, I thought Lafreniere was excellent that playoffs. Like, that kid line emerged, and I thought he was just a wrecking ball of a force. Not necessarily just the production, but in terms of how he threw his weight around, how he created turnovers, how he created energy. Like, he very much looked to me like a guy who's starting to figure out the league. And then last year, it didn't come together the way everyone had hoped. But now that we're finally starting to see it, I think the Rangers are a real, real problem in the East.
Yeah, I don't want to dispute that again, especially with them being my Stanley Cup pick. Don't want to cut them out at the knees. There are a couple things that stand
out. To confirm, are they your cup pick? Just want to confirm.
Yeah, we'll just lock that in now. Okay. Yeah. No, there are a couple things, right? Like, they are a team, as you said, has been very special teams driven in terms of their success. When you talk about their 5-on-5 numbers, actually below water on expected goals, like, their shots are pretty much even. That makes you a little bit nervous they've had power play success in the past, and they have the goaltending in particular to have penalty killing success. So those units should remain strong. But whenever you have a team that's really reliant on that, that can make you a little bit nervous. There's some performances, like Jonathan Quick has been insane. Like, you know, this guy's looked washed for almost half a decade now, and then he comes out and he's been incredible. Now, I know that there's room for Shesterkin to be better, that would help mitigate Quick coming back to earth. but I still think there's a little bit there that's been iffy. Like Lafreniere is a really interesting case because I do think it's a massive thing that they're moving him up, that they're playing him with Panarin consistently, like an amazing playmaker for a scorer to grow alongside. And that's something they really hadn't committed to over the last few years. Like they've done it occasionally. Now it looks like they're committed to it. But you're still talking about a guy who has a record as 24 shots, scored on 7 of them, like less than 2 shots a game. It's not like he's creating at this massive level that makes you 100% sure this next step is here. I'm interested in what I've seen so far. Like he is someone who is making a difference at this particular moment, but you want to see that continue before you say, okay, he has done it. And part of the reason I like this team coming into season was, yeah, again, those young guys taking a step. Lafreniere looks like it potentially, but I think it's too early to say for sure. Capo Caco, absolutely nothing. Like maybe it's time to teach this guy a penalty kill. Like it's kind of pretty. And like you said, coming into the season, he was coming off a better year. Like he looked like someone who might've been more poised to do some damage, to take the step. And so, you know, Adam Fox, again, like his injury doesn't seem that bad, but whenever you have injuries early in the year, like you have things recurring, like he's so central to what they do. I'm poking holes in a team that has played very well, has achieved a lot, and we thought was good coming into the year. So it's not as if I'm saying this team is absolutely trash, but there are sort of a few red flags lingering around the sides. Like I love this team's top 6. I love this team's top 4 defensemen. The bottom half of this lineup is, you know, that's true to some extent with a lot of teams, but the bottom half of the lineup doesn't impress me compared to some other contenders. I think that this is the type of team that probably wants to think about making some trades at the deadline and like bolstering that part of the roster. We'll see what happens. We talked earlier in the show about the Flames and all the players they've got going, probably not like a Lindholm landing spot, but you know, one of the defensemen would look good on this team's third pair and special teams. There's a lot that can go right for this team, and they're absolutely in the mix, but I don't think it's one of those scenarios like, you know, the way the Golden Knights came out, where, you know, they won the cup and they came out and you're like, oh, they asserted that they were every bit as good as they looked in the playoffs. I'm not quite there with the Rangers. They always looked like a team that was in that tier with potential to move forward. And that's still where I'd place them. I don't think that they've done something yet that makes me confident, like, oh, this team is way better than I thought they were coming into the year.
That's fair. And I mean, we'd be remiss to not mention that Panarin has just started the season on an absolute heater. Like he has 24 points
ridiculous.
Already.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Like he's come out with something to prove. He did not have the playoff that everyone expected of him. He definitely heard it. He's definitely come out with a little bit extra pep to his step. Every time he touches a puck right now, it just looks dangerous. Like you're, you know, a little bit antsy on the edge of your seat. Like something might happen at any point. That free flowing hockey we'd like to keep instead of a shot clock. And so, you know, kudos to him. I also think it's worth mentioning Peter Laviolette in his career has been an excellent year one coach and an excellent in general early on coach. So, you know, he first started with the Islanders. They went to the playoffs back-to-back years. They won heck of a series against the Leafs. He got hired by Carolina mid-season, but his first full season in Carolina coming out of the lockout, they won the Stanley Cup. His first season in Philly, they went to the Stanley Cup final. They lost in the second round the following 2 years. Nashville, they went to the first round, but year three, they went to the Stanley Cup finals. Like, you know, Washington, that he did go to back-to-back playoffs the first 2 years there. By and large, he's been fairly successful early on. Some coaches are really good at coming in, and he's coached with quite a few teams now. So that's kind of become, I guess, his MO. But he can come in and give you a little something. I think to some of the pieces you were mentioning in terms of Calgary and whatnot, I'm not going to go, you know, a full roster breakdown of who I think that they should look to acquire. But I will say, I didn't think that last year they hit the right notes at the deadline. You know, they brought in Kane, they brought in Tarasenko, and I watched them a ton after that. I mean, obviously I was very intrigued by them. I think everyone was, and it really felt forced and shoehorned in terms of like their lineup deployment. I mean, just like Kane was suddenly like leading the power play on the half wall, and I'm watching like Adam Fox and Panarin kind of sit there like, what? And you know, so I would need to see, like, they do need to add a little bit, obviously, like pretty much every team does, like only Vegas could pretty much competently sit there and say, like, this is basically who we won the cup with last year. Like, we're running it back. And everyone would be like, all right. But even then, I would say they need to replace Riley Smith. And they haven't done that yet. But, like, the Rangers do need to do something. I'm curious to see what exactly that is and if they hit the right notes this time. But I'm encouraged. Like, I mean, I think it's fair to say, like, we all thought they'd be good, and they are good. I wouldn't say, like, they've gone up to, like, some elite tier status team for me just yet. But, like I said, like, they're a problem.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.